Hello and welcome to Disrupting the Degree, the education marketing podcast. I'm Stephen Cleary from Carnival Content with
Zeynep Vyas
and Zeynep Vyas from the Brand Education.
This podcast is all about higher education with industry trends, experts and practical ideas across the student experience, brand and marketing.
In this episode of Disrupting the Degree, we're joined by Martin Edwards, Director of Marketing and Advancement at Loughborough University. We'll be discussing differentiation, brand and marketing strategy during COVID.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Martin.
Good afternoon. It's lovely to be described as an expert, Stephen. I never thought I was an expert before.
You are an expert.
You know, that's very kind of you. You know, I think, you know, like most people, I get imposter syndrome. And I'm a Welshman as well. I think in Wales, we often tend to think of ourselves as imposters as well. So it's nice to be called an expert, and it's really nice to be contributing.
Yeah, that's brilliant to have you today. Can we start off by asking you, is it possible for university marketing teams to truly differentiate their brands? So we're going in deep straight away.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really... it's a really interesting question for a couple of reasons. I think firstly, looking outside of HE, there's been some big beasts in marketing like Byron Sharp and Mark Ritson and others who really in the last couple of years debated over the semantics of differentiation versus distinctiveness and whether you can truly have a USP. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite informative. I think that discussion is quite interesting, and I think it's good for university marketers and marketing leaders to be aware of that, because looking at HE specifically, the reason I think it's really difficult is not because teams aren't creative or haven't got the talent. We've got some fantastically talented people across the UK.
Yes.
And I think we're seeing that during COVID.
Yes, definitely.
We're really seeing people. But it's the fact that there's a lot of levers which in a commercial company, marketers can inform and control, which in the university context, we can't. And probably for quite good reason. And I'm not saying we should. Because obviously universities, that they're not commercial entities, particularly in the UK. The majority of us are public bodies. We've got charitable status. Mm-hmm. We are increasingly under pressure to become marketized and commercialized. And students themselves, I think, see themselves as customers. And again, quite rightly, whether we like it or not, because they are paying higher fees and they have higher expectations and they expect return on investment. So I think it's very difficult for universities. Because a university, if you think about differentiation, you know, each university, whether you're Russell Group or Post 92, whether you're ranked number one or you're ranked 130 or whatever it is, we fundamentally do the same thing. I think, you know, every university mm-hmm. will teach for sure. Every university to some extent will have research and enterprise ambitions. They'll also have a sense of public engagement and civic duty. They'll be rooted in their sense of place. And they've also got multiple stakeholders, whether that's the community, industrial partners, alumni, current students, you know, internal stakeholders, staff, academics. So you're already, I guess, on a bit of a loser because you're trying to be all things to everybody. And so I think at a strategic level, not just at a marketing level in universities, it's really hard to come up with a strategy that truly is unique and truly defines and differentiates a university. So I think I want to say that first as the context, but that doesn't mean then that what we can't see are marketing teams being really creative and maybe a bit more tactical and trying to focus on points of distinction. And I think that's where I'd rather focus mm-hmm. on. It's how can marketing teams maybe work with academic colleagues, for example, to inform the portfolio. And I think increasingly you're seeing market research and market intel teams in universities, which we didn't have 10 years ago. I think we're seeing that, and what they're doing is they're using that insight to identify new programs. You know, identify maybe you know programs that have you know longer term demand to fit the needs of the future workforce, but also they're helping to refine existing curriculum, existing profiles by looking at what competitors are offering, what the data is saying, and then also you're seeing marketing teams, you know, use you know current students, focus groups. Be really evidence-based and data-driven in a way they weren't before to then refine the messaging and work with academic colleagues to tease out what makes a program really different, I guess. And why should I study? Why should I study program A at University X over program A at University Y? And I think that's where you're really seeing that differentiation. But in its truest sense, it's very difficult. And when you go beyond you know, campus versus non-campus, whether you go beyond urban versus rural or league table, You know, it comes down to the, very often for students, you ask them, you know, the first thing is the program the one I want? Is the content of the program what I want?
Have we gone into a situation, especially in the UK, where all universities are pretty much offering all the same programs?
Yeah.
Should universities start to think a bit more about specializing? And then is that easier then for the marketing team to differentiate because you're known for X, Y, and Z subject areas? Or is that not the case?
I think I think some institutions do that more. I think sometimes though it's partly out of necessity as well, because, you know, unfortunately, you know, it pains me to say this, because I think like a lot of people that work in the sector, not everybody, but you know, I'm pro-European. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm very left-leaning and liberal, you know, and you've seen the decline in European languages, modern languages, for example, which is a real shame. And sometimes it can be very challenging then for an institution, you know, the financial viability of a program as well. So I think that's part of the thinking. I do think, and sorry, I am going to answer your question, but I just want to, something else you just sort of sparked in my mind. The other thing as well,
right?
Which I've seen, which I think is really important now, is that we are seeing elements of, I think it's a good thing, elements of different aspects of, say, marketing and also consumer psychology and design begin to filter into the HE sector in marketing teams. And what I mean by that is things like user-centered design and really focusing on the end user, and also focusing on all the touch points that a prospective student or parent has with the university. And I think
it's applying customer experience, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things we may come on to this later when we talk about marketing teams. You know, there's two big things I try to look at from my leadership point of view. One is around creativity and nurturing that process, which we can come on to. And then the other is more around just empowerment. And I think it's turning to my colleagues, irrespective of their grade or their salary or whatever the job title is, and say, right, you are the expert in your field.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the power. You're active in this process. You've got control. If you spot something, if you spot an issue, if you spot a problem and you think you can fix it and find a solution, you do that. So a marketing lead or a customer service lead is a leader, irrespective of whatever their grade is. And
absolutely.
I think what I'm trying to say is, I've worked in institutions, the institution I'm at now and the previous institution, that's got a really good reputation. That's not my opinion. That's the opinion of many, many people and lots of surveys and various accolades. But I've got a really good reputation for student experience and for treating students, you know, irrespective of whether the student, you know, eventually enrolls with us. But when we do open days, be it virtual or physical, we give a really good customer service. You know, when students visit campus, when students get in touch with us. And I think that's really important, because I think increasingly it's the whole experience you're selling, isn't it? You know, when you go to university, it's such a huge, I mean, I think we forget, you know, if you buy a car, it's one thing. If you buy a phone, but university, you know, it's a massive emotional commitment by young people, but also as a parent now, I appreciate it even more, particularly for international parents, the not just the financial investment, the emotional investment. So I think every single touch point means something. The challenge we have as marketers is we can't often pick out which of those touch points had the most impact. What we do know is if the touch point is negative, it can have a really negative impact. So somebody,
yes,
and the reason I'm talking about this, I've worked at those institutions, Loughborough and Swansea. I've had parents and students come up to me at open days and say, the reason my son or daughter has made this university his or her or their first choice is because you made us feel special. Mm-hmm. We get a feeling here that that you value us, and the customer service is so smooth, and the aftercare, and even if things go wrong, you look after us. And we don't necessarily get that at university Y that might be higher ranked.
Mm-hmm. It's so vital though,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah.
Because if at an open day or a virtual open day, you don't get that service, then you automatically, and it's the same as if a website's really badly designed, your audience, your customers assume that if you can't design a website, you can't design, like, give good customer service an open day, then when you're on campus being taught, it will be the same.
Yeah, well, that's
feeling,
experience.
Really.
And that's almost like the window to your brand, isn't it? Your website and the sort of virtual experiences.
I think the other thing is that universities are experiential, so you don't know what the outcome of the student will ever be. You know, it might be different things for different people. So I think for the students, I think where universities can excel, or I think where non-Russell groups have excelled is customer service. And I've seen that because they don't have the prestige. But what are your kind of thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to correct you. I think it's the thing about class.
No, feel free. Yeah. This is about a debate. So if you want to correct us.
And I would say, you know, I mean, Swansea's a good example. You know, it's how you define class as well, isn't it? It's how you define prestige and quality. And I would say, you know, Loughborough's been around a long time. Swansea this year has had a centenary. It's been a university for 100 years. I think you look at some of the partnership, and I'm not being defensive now, I'm just saying it's just interesting because I think that kind of comment as well, it shows that I think the Russell Group, and I'm not having a go at the Russell Group because I studied at Russell University and I've got friends that work and I've worked at two, but I think that there's a real debate, isn't there, about just more broadly about, you know, the role of universities and the value that universities add. And I think I'd rather have that kind of discussion than whether, you know, is one university better quality than the other? Because I think a lot of students are confused by league tables. I think a lot of, you know, don't get me wrong, I use league tables and I think some of them are very, very helpful. I think, you know, people have recently been knocking the NSS, but I do think that the NSS on principle and when it does work is it really helps to give students the voice and maybe pinpoint things that aren't working. And enable universities to then respond and do something about this. So I think there's a real debate, you know, it's a big debate about quality. But as I say, I think, you know, coming back again, so I'm going round in circles now, Stephen, but coming back to your other question about specialism as well. So I think you can definitely build a reputation around, and we've tried to do this at Loughborough with our sort of Loughborough family, you know, hashtag. And that's more than just a hashtag. If you actually ask our students, now our vice chancellor often does this at open days unprompted, he'll ask our student ambassadors, you know, what do we talk about here, the sense of community, what's it called? And they'll say to prospective students, the Loughborough family, and they eat, sleep and breathe it. So I think you can begin to get a reputation by specializing, maybe not so much on particular programs, or you can have flagship, you know, schools and departments yes. that are really strong because of a myriad of things. But you can also focus on, as I say, that service, that sense of community and make it really tangible. I think another big thing I just wanted to talk about today, and it's a subject, you know, I think about, should I mention this? Because I'm not from this community, or, you know, I don't have that sort of shared experience, but it's a really big topic which I think has come to the fore during COVID, because of COVID, but also because of what's happened in the summer. And I think that's around the EDI agenda, the equality, diversity and inclusion agenda at universities. Because I think increasingly the marketing teams are in a really privileged position because we're at that intersection between, you know, the external facing world and then also very often working internally as well with current students, with different professional services supporting academics. And I think certainly in my team, where we have responsibility for our external and internal comms, we've got a real role to play when it comes to, you know, fully supporting our staff and students and alumni from the BAME community, but also from any other, you know, maybe more marginal groups or groups that, you know, in the past haven't had that support, you know, within HE. So I think that
yes, so important.
I think you'll see more of that. I think you'll see, and it's not about, you know, students, you know, being woke and people being, you know, just for the sake of it, box ticking. I really think you're going to start to see a debate perhaps around increasingly students will have that expectation, and not just students from, you know, from the BAME community, for example, but, you know, students from any community, any background, really are going to start holding universities to account when it comes to their sense of social responsibility, their values, in the same way they're beginning to hold corporates to account, particularly those around, you know, George Floyd, Black Lives Matters in the summer, where you had these big beasts come out, these big corporates, and say, oh, we're fully behind Black Lives Matter. But when you look at their practices, their recruitment practices and everything else, they don't necessarily, you know, they talk the talk, but don't walk the walk. And I think at Loughborough, the last few years, we've really tried to address this issue. We're not there yet, of course, but I think that's something that I think marketers often don't shy away from, but I'm sad to say in some institutions, we don't even really think about it that much. We tend to do it, you know, we maybe just leave it to the international office, you know, but there's obviously in the UK, there's, you know, we're a very diverse country, you know, very diverse culture. It's fantastic. You know, it's you know, it's a superb, you know, culture, you know, based on people that have come here from all over the world over a number of years, you know, and, you know, big immigrant communities and diasporas that make the UK, you know, such a fantastic place. So I think there's more that we as marketers can do to actually open up our eyes and ears and maybe listen to some of our staff and students and colleagues and bring some of their shared experiences into what we do in a more deliberate and cohesive way and not in a tokenistic kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
that's quite a deep discussion, but it's really in the front of my mind, I think. Yeah. I think it's something that's really... It agitates me because I want to do more personally to be an ally. Yeah. I think a lot of people I've spoken to, white British people, I hope have really started to challenge their own understanding and their own prejudices and their own maybe inherent biases in the last few months. I think part of the thing about being at home during COVID is you do have that time to reflect, you know, although in my case, obviously I'm juggling a job and some young kids as well. But I do think that it's a real opportunity to step back and really think about, you know, as marketers, as leaders, are we compassionate? Are we empathetic? Are we really being open? Are we prepared to learn new things and challenge, you know, maybe our assumptions and misconceptions about everything we do? But I think particularly in terms of EDI, that's really important, I think.
And we have these platforms where we can make a difference.
Yes,
exactly. And I think I read this really interesting piece recently about this. And I think you're right. I think universities do shy away from it. But I think a lot of universities and their existence came from these causes. Like I was reading about UCL recently, and they were the first English university to allow women to come and study and to offer them the same equality as men. And I think so. I think universities have these kind of traits embedded within them, even about equality and diversity. I think they are some of the most diverse campuses because they have students from all over the world and academics from all over the world. But I think they're not bold when it comes to standing up for their causes and standing up for particular issues. I have seen that where a lot of universities don't really stand.
It reminds me of Bryce Ives, who was on our podcast a few episodes ago, saying, do you really live your values as a university?
That's something that obviously, you know, it transcends marketing. But as you say, Stephen, I think marketing teams absolutely have to be aware of that. Because I think very often... and again, I don't want to say something that sounds really cliche, but I do think, you know, sometimes the marketer in the room is very often the person that's a bit of a sort of sense check, a reality checker, because, you know, we're the ones ultimately that have to, you know, try and convey to an external audience, you know, what it is about our institution that you know, what it stands for, but also what makes it special. And it comes right the way back around, doesn't it, to that question about, you know, differentiation and distinctiveness. Because I do think there's room, you know, for institutions now. And you're seeing it in different ways. Some institutions are very much setting themselves up around sustainability and sustainability agenda, being a green institution. And I think you can take sustainability, which I'd like to do at Loughborough. We're not doing this yet, but it's some of the conversations we're having, you know, going beyond just sustainability in its broader sense into sort of social justice and equality and food security and, you know, all those kinds of things. So, you know, moving beyond, you know, for example, at Loughborough, we do a huge amount of work, you know, around renewable energies and around, you know, reducing carbon and the green agenda and everything. But we do a lot of other work, which you wouldn't necessarily immediately lump in under sustainability, but it's all about really creating a more equitable, inclusive, prosperous future for us all. And I think, you know, it's thinking about that in the bigger picture sense. But then at the same time, this is where I think universities really struggle. Equally then being rooted in their sense of place, which I know is a real priority for the government with the levelling up agenda and making sure that not just London and some of the bigger cities benefit from universities, but also the wider economy thing. So I think it's getting that balance right between the global and the local. And that's not easy to do. But I think, you know, as marketers, you know, there are universities, you know, different departments, academics, support services that do amazing, and students' union that do amazing work in the local and regional community and economy. And then you have the others as well that then are more internationally focused. And then there's some that do both. You know, you may work with an industry partner that has a big global footprint and a footprint in the UK and a footprint overseas. And it's how you tell that story. So I think, you know, that sense of, coming back to my point about, you know, two things I think are important: creativity and then, you know, leadership, you know, organizational leadership. And I think organizational leadership starts with as well being proactive and being prepared to go out there into the university community, you know, within an institution, and really build those relationships with the key academic colleagues in particular, to try and understand their research, understand their teaching, understand what they're trying to achieve. And then, you know, building that in and coming up with joint objectives. Because I think sometimes in the past, and I'm not saying all marketing teams in universities do this, but you often get that tension, don't you, between professional services, marketing, and the academy. And I think, you know, some of that's down, it's sometimes down to both sides. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all working in one institution for the greater good. And I think it just comes down to taking the time to explain, taking the time to listen, particularly listen, and also particularly taking the time to maybe offer training and guidance, but being prepared to learn as well. And I think those, where you've got that sweet spot is where a marketing leader and a senior academic colleague or a community or a group of colleagues, they can pick up the phone to each other, and they don't get bogged down in, you know, central versus decentralized or professional services versus academia. You know, we're just colleagues working together to, you know, help recruit students and give students a good experience, amplify the research, build the position and the profile. And it's then when you have those discussions, I think, that you can really start to understand maybe what makes a particular program special. And that's how you can differentiate or get as close to differentiation or distinctiveness as you can. I think USPs are very hard to come by, but you can tease out these little points of competitive difference about a particular program or a faculty or an industry partner or an alumni that, you know, in addition to maybe just things like location or league table, that can really help paint a richer picture and allow students and others to really make an informed choice about, is this university the right one for me, be it to study here, work with this university, etc., you know, and be associated with them. So I think that's a really, really important thing as well.
So right now, how are you measuring and demonstrating the success of marketing efforts? So by this, I mean the sort of main KPIs, the data strategy you have in place, or how you're using data to kind of drive decisions?
I said this earlier, I think I've seen there has been a shift in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, with more and more institutions investing in specific market research, market intelligence teams in their own right. In the past, you know, we've tended to have data teams and analysts that sat maybe in a planning office. And a lot of work they did was quite, you know, and it's not downgrading this work, by the way, but it was quite procedural. It was looking at, you know, HESA returns and that kind of thing. I think now what you're seeing is more and more institutions, as I say, may only be one person in some team. You know, I was very lucky at Swansea and at Loughborough. We've got a team of people, and they work to ensure that, you know, that our marketing, as much as it can be, is informed by data and by analysis and by, you know, qualitative studies. I mean, I think at a more, you know, sort of direct level, I think, you know, my digital team, for example, and it'll be true of many digital teams now, Stephen will know this, you know, we just come through clearing.
You know, they're exhausted. So,
yeah, they are tired, absolutely, and then thanks to the government's A-level exam policy, we had a double clearing. You know, it was so good the first time, we had it twice. You know,
oh,
so
God.
I think I think a lot of universities have to work for a longer period. But my point was that, you know, before, you know, during, and after, from a marketing perspective, you know, obviously, you know, we run, you know, we got organic content, organic campaigns, we have paid content, paid campaigns, we build landing pages, we have specific freshers and clearing pages. You know, we're constantly looking at traffic. We're looking at, you know, all the different, you know, bounce rates and where, you know, how long people spend on the page and their journey. We're looking at the engagement rates for our paid campaigns. So to come back to your question, you know, we do have those conversion metrics. I think that's not news to anybody. You know, we look at, you know, when we run our if we run any campaigns through UCAS, we run our own email conversion campaigns. We look at click-through rates and open rates, etc. And we then try and tweak and, you know, it's not always easy to do things like A/B testing, yes. but I think increasingly mm-hmm. now institutions are doing that as much as they can. I think the expertise is there. It's more just the time mm-hmm. and yes. the resource to do it. I think what Loughborough do as well, which is interesting, and it comes back to, I think, a point question you're asking is about maybe some of those more intangible KPIs around reputation. So we do use an external brand tracker, mm-hmm. which is something I think, you know, a lot of commercial companies would use without even thinking. So, you know, we do that, and we are, I think, of the numerous universities I've worked with, that's probably one of the first times I've worked at an institution with a brand tracker. And I think part of the reason for that is my boss, the chief operating officer, is somebody that really understands marketing, has a marketing and PR and comms background himself, mm-hmm. and so is very supportive, and that's helpful.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But often the comms yeah. team have the brand tracker, but that information isn't passed into marketing or not used from a marketing sense, more from a PR point of view, isn't it?
That's right. So that's absolutely spot on, Stephen. So the other thing I was going to mention then, within my team, you know, we've got a very strong corporate comms, which includes PR. And then they also then work with, you know, an agency to get the data around our press campaigns and our press coverage and PR campaigns throughout the year. So there's quite a bit of data there, quite a bit of rich data.
Yeah.
I think then looking at how we maybe, you know, in a broader sense, how we then have, and this is something that's really, I'm really topical for me because I'm working on it at the moment with the with senior academic colleagues, is how can marketing actually show that we're having a positive impact on our research marketing, our research efforts, and our enterprise efforts. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it's very similar to students. You know, I mean, if you run a specific campaign, you know, you might bring a student through to your CRM, to a landing page, you can try and track them. Although you might say, well, that campaign obviously contributed, but you'll never know, you know, what else then helped that student make up their mind about coming to you. And it's a bit like that, I guess, with research and enterprise marketing. You can try and be as targeted as you like. You can try and maybe do some specific paid advertising on LinkedIn or Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at demographics. You can push out content through certain paid channels, through specific sector, maybe or trade specific publications, online publications, and that's an interesting one, because, you know, ultimately I think if you ask colleagues about, you know, research and enterprise, for enterprise, you know, very often it's you know, it's how much income was generated, but also, you know, from a research perspective, it's research income, and of course next year we have the REF as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about getting that balance between, you know, with the REF impact case studies, you know, is there any more that marketing can do to maybe, you know, build marketing content around them, like podcasts like this,
mm-hmm.
or video content, just to bring them to life? And I think those sorts of areas of marketing are probably still evolving, because
yes,
I think gradually more universities are moving from just focusing on recruitment marketing mm-hmm. into that broader research and enterprise space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting, because I think those are the story. I mean, it's really nice to tell really positive student content stories. So, you know, there was a student that we featured, for example, in the summer. We did a virtual, it wasn't a graduation ceremony, but a virtual celebration for our students that sadly couldn't graduate this year because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you get some really lovely stories about students that have overcome adversity.
Absolutely.
There was one student, I think, you know, that had came from care. She'd been in a care environment and never thought she would get to university, and then was phenomenally successful and got a great degree.
Amazing.
And those are great stories. And I think we're very good as a university sector at telling those stories. What we also need to do then is maybe get a bit more practiced at going out and sniffing out the stories about our research,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah.
Research and impact and real world impact.
I think
and
sometimes we wait for academics to maybe come to us for press releases. And I think what university maybe marketing teams need to do is maybe be a bit more like detectives or journalists. Mm-hmm. That's often the phrase I get, you know, is to go out and it's hard though, because you haven't got the time, but to go out and sort of sniff out those stories and make the time, carve out the time to go and sit down, have a coffee with an associate dame for research, maybe go and sit in a staff room of a lunchtime and just say, I'm here today. If any of you want to come and have a coffee conversation in the coffee, talk about your research.
Yeah.
And it's carving out that time, because those research stories can be absolutely fascinating. And you often have sort of hidden gems that you didn't even realize. under your own nose in an institution where you've got sort of preeminent, amazing research going on. And it's how we, and also to be fair to academic colleagues, sometimes they're not always comfortable about promoting their work because mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. not why they do it. They do it because they're really passionate about a discipline and about the impact of their research. So it comes back to my point about it has to be a conversation. You've got to say to somebody, you know, are you comfortable? What are you trying to achieve? You know, would you work with us on this? And then listening, because mm-hmm. I think often, and it's an unfortunate part of Twitter, I think, and social media is even if somebody is talking about research that's not even particularly contentious mm-hmm. or controversial, they might end up getting trolled anyway, because that's what, you know. So I think it can be a little bit of a scary place for anybody. But I think academic colleagues, oh, it's not worth the hassle, you know. I just want to do this research and make a difference. So I think it's then working with them to maybe try and persuade and show the benefits of engaging with social
and support them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then support them when things maybe don't go quite so well. Because I think the potential for thought leadership is massive, and the conversation is a great platform for that. But I still think we haven't fully tapped into that yet. So
I agree, because I think research impacts a lot of elements for the universities, you know, like rankings, your research impacts that.
Yeah.
You've got REF, you've got KEF, you know, you've got a number of external things that Absolutely. Impact from research. And I also think students will buy into universities based on research in the future, because I've seen a shift from students wanting to go to a university because of a course, but rather going to a university because of a cause now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got Greta Thunberg, a 14-year-old promoting climate change. So I think the users and audiences are shifting. But one of the things that I find interesting is, are you getting buy-in from senior leaders to promote all of these elements and market all of these elements? Do you think there's an uncertainty around cost saving and things like that? Or do you think universities will push those stories moving forward?
From my own experience, there's absolutely an appetite and a desire. I very much feel like, you know, 99% of the time I'm pushing on an open door.
Yeah,
I think it's more a case of, with academic colleagues, that they're almost looking to me and my colleagues to be the marketing experts.
Yeah,
and I think to make the most, because, you know, academic colleagues work incredibly hard. You know, they're often the very good ones. They're often teaching, researching, traveling, normally doing conferences, supervising PhDs.
Yeah,
they're doing open day presentations. So I think, you know, they're often very, they're keen, but they're time poor. So I think it puts the onus back on the marketing specialist to say to them, right, okay, this is what I need from you. You know, this is what, you know, establish that common ground, objectives, what the story is, and then make it easy for them, giving them the tools mm-hmm. to get that content to you in the right format. And I think that's the key thing. And I think we're getting there slowly. But it's always a challenge, because the point, you know, the whole, and I'm speaking on behalf of academic colleagues, but it's not their job ultimately to do marketing. You know, we obviously need them to, because I think that authentic content, that intellectual mm-hmm. narrative, that intellectual vision, you know, I can't fabricate that myself. I'm not an academic, you know, it needs to be authentic. So I need to work with them. So I think your point is, most senior academics absolutely want to work with us. You made a really interesting point about students, I think, generally, not all of them, but a lot of students now, I definitely think, are more altruistic.
Yeah.
They are more mm-hmm. aware of causes. As I said right at the beginning, I think they really look for the value mm-hmm. behind brands. Mm-hmm. I mean yep. the Colin Kaepernick Nike campaign, which is a couple of years old now, absolutely superb campaign.
Yep.
At the time, people were saying, oh, it's a massive risk for Nike, or Nike, however you put it. I say Nike in Wales, but Nike.
We say Nike.
You had some middle-aged, you know, white gammons burning their Nikes. But you look at the sales, the actual sales after that campaign went up, because the majority, the younger demographic, you know, that buy Nike.
Yeah.
And I include myself in that, because I am under 45. That's sort of maybe teenage.
Sorry, I didn't
20s.
Mean to laugh then.
Don't laugh, Steve. but I think, you know, what I'm saying? I think there's a definite people, you know, people like to do business with other people, and they like to do business with, you know, people that they can identify with and have common values, and they think, you know, good people, mm-hmm. you know, and that's not always the case, but I think certainly it's increasing the case. So one practical way I see this manifesting itself, aside from maybe, as I mentioned, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and EDI and, you know, what universities are doing, is around sustainability. I think increasingly students are expecting universities not to be dishing out lots of plastic stash and merchandise, but also, you know, holding us to account. And, and one thing we're trying to do at Loughborough, and Glasgow have done this for a while, is, and Swansea actually, our mutual friend, Stephen, Rebecca, she's very passionate about this, is how we begin to link the university's efforts to the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals from the UN. And I think it's something I'm very keen to do, working with sustainability colleagues at Loughborough, is, you know, to promote that, to promote how our research does that, but even then our students, how the syllabus, if the student's doing a research project, if they're a master's student or a PhD student, particularly relevant, how their work is aligned to the broader UN SDGs. And that's something, you know, I'm never afraid to say if I've seen something good elsewhere. You know, Glasgow have done this for a while, and I think it's definitely something that will appeal to those students that are particularly aspirational in a good way and high achieving and want to make a difference.
It's like if you have an open day and you talk about your research about having energy self-sufficient hubs, and then the building that you're actually in is self-powered or whatever the research is, like that's what you need to do, isn't it?
And even like you've got like, you know, things that will matter to them, like they're, you know, like for example, Durham does this quite well, but they've got this surface science research, which is trying to take out oil of the ocean, you know, using this particular piece of research that they've got, but it's also helping them waterproof phones and things like that. So I think that kind of stuff is interesting. It just needs to be brought to light a bit more, like vocalize those stories.
So going back to marketing then, Martin. Back to marketing, Martin. So what does a high-performing brand marketing and student recruitment team look like then over the next 5 years post-pandemic, the new world, when we can actually see each other in person?
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Well, I would hope, and again, without labelling the point, I'd hope it would look quite diverse. I hope it would look like a good, you know, I think a lot of marketing teams generally are, but I think the more diverse, the better. The more, you know, different viewpoints and perspectives and experiences and life experiences, I think that's always really, really important.
Definitely.
Because, you know, the world is diverse. Universities are often very diverse.
Yes.
I think, you know, we need to, without sounding sort of cliche, for me, I'm really big on emotion and empathy. I like things that move me, whether it makes me laugh or very often, increasingly, maybe it's getting old and I got kids. Yeah, because that's often some of the best marketing. The University of Western Sydney video, you know, with the, I don't know if you've seen that, the refugee video.
Yeah, that's amazing. The alumni.
I mean, I've actually met that gentleman. I met him at a conference in Melbourne a couple of years ago. And it was fantastic. But the point is, obviously had very high production values, but forget about that.
Yeah.
That was just, I mean, it doesn't matter. It could have been for anything. The fact it was a university video.
Yeah, yeah.
The traffic it had. But even now, even thinking about it, but when I watched that video, that last 10 seconds, if it doesn't move you, you're dead. You
know, I agree with you.
And I think that's what I'm trying to say. You know, it's the stuff that really gets the cut through.
Yeah.
Is stuff that's either really clever and funny, or it's the stuff that really stays with you.
Yeah. But on the humor side of things.
Yes.
I was reading an article on LinkedIn earlier this week, actually, about just the lack of humor, and not just for the obvious reason in 2020, but because brands are focusing so much on their values that actually the humor side has been lost. So I totally agree with you on the emotive side, but I would, like, we did that at USW a bit on social. We had a bit of a laugh with our students, and it really resonated, but doesn't seem to be happening so much now.
But you know what I've taken away from you though, Martin, your point around nurturing talent, hiring talented people and then telling them what to do. I think no one wants that. And I think your point on that is really
spot on.
Yeah.
Didn't you set up creative groups in Swansea?
That was the final thing I was going to say, really. One of the books that genuinely changed my life from a marketing point of view is written by a guy called Ed Catmull, who was the former CEO of Pixar. So the book is called Creativity Inc. And I read it about 2 or 3 years ago, and it really, and I'm a very sort of hands-on, but not in a micromanaging sort of way. I'm a hands-on sort of leader, I think, in the sense that I like to go and have a catch-up with people and have a cup of tea or a coffee for me and just wander around and see how they're doing and just chat to them, but not to micromanage them, just to chat about anything, you know, about the David Bowie back catalogue or whatever it is. And I think it's just being, you know, approachable and being a sounding board. And I think reading, that's how I naturally think I tried to lead anyway. But I read this book and it just encapsulated for me. I'm conscious of time, but I think the key takeaway is the two things. So Ed Catmull, it's really interesting. Ed Catmull's background, he's a sort of computer scientist, physicist, but he grew up during the golden age of Disney, you know, Snow White, Mickey Mouse, those amazing old Disney cartoons before they had CGI. And he started thinking back in the early 70s, wouldn't it be great if I could use computers to generate animation? And he sort of sat on that idea for a while. And then later on, he met Steve Jobs, et cetera, and then a lot of the very creative. So Ed Catmull is not an animator, but he loves cartoons and he understands storytelling. And what he really understands is how to create a culture. And his mantra is quite simple. It's basically mistake. If you're not making a mistake, you're not learning anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true.
Making mistakes is a fundamental part of learning and doing something new. If we don't make mistakes, we're just doing the same repetitive work day in, day out. And for that to be the case, then you need to, as a leader, his job is to create a culture where there's no fear of failure, where there's no fear of making mistakes, where people do make a mistake, they put their hand up, they learn from it, they move on. And where if anything gets in the way of people being creative, it's his job as a leader to remove those obstacles and smooth the path.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think that was just a beautiful, you know, way of doing it. And they had a thing at Pixar called the Brain Trust. And this is where the other point comes in. So yes, you've got creativity, but you've also got data and evidence. You listen to your customers. So the Brain Trust is where they would pool their ideas on a weekly or daily basis, depending on what they're working on. And they would get the test audience reaction and they would look at that reaction and then they'd go back and refine their ideas. And I think a good example, you know, which you're probably familiar with, you know, Woody in Toy Story, the Tom Hanks character, when they, you know, I still find him quite annoying now.
In fact, He's all right, but he's a bit whiny.
Yeah. Now, the point of the story is, when they first did the test audience run, the original sort of rushes or whatever they call it, the test audiences hated him because he was even more whiny. They thought he was a really negative, like a really bad Eeyore. And I think that was quite, so I think the key thing is, when people say, oh, creativity, no fear of failure, a lot of people maybe might say, well, actually, you know, people aren't really being, what's the word? They're not being, you know, responsible. They're not really holding each other to account. That's not what I mean. You respect the data. You respect the evidence. You're doing something to add value for the customer and meet your objective.
Yeah. Yes.
But you're doing it in an environment which is supportive. So I think bringing the two together, what I always say, you know, is, you know, with any sort of marketing, you know, ultimately, I like it, but I'm not our target demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So have you tested, have you shown that to a 17-year-old or you know, or whatever? And if the answer is no, well, I will always say, well, can we try and do that? So, and I don't you know, pick people up over it in a nasty way. I just try and build it into what we do now. So I think, you know, I'm really keen that, you know, and that's where the Big Ideas Group came from, Steve. I just ripped it off from Pixar, really, with the Brain Trust. But what was key in those meetings was at those meetings, we had, you know, Mark and his market research team. They're a key part of that group. So it wasn't just pie in the sky, blue sky thinking. We had a clear purpose and we had data. But then how you get to the end product is entirely up to you.
Yeah.
But you know, you have a respect for data and appreciation for evidence. I think the two together are really powerful, and that empowers people, because if you've got data, you think you've got a good idea, you test it and the target audience like it, that's pretty compelling to me. And then if somebody in a senior management role, maybe like me even, who's a bit, you know, a slightly middle-aged white guy, but I'm not the target audience, I will say to my team, fine, if you think it's right and you like it and the data shows us the customer likes it, you go ahead. And I think that's the, and then for me, just to let go of that and empower people to do that, I think is a really crucial thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't often happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it happens enough.
And this, I was literally going to go back to the very first question. Surely this is how you differentiate yourself if no one else is doing this. I was trying to do a similar thing with Rebecca several years ago, and it did work. although it was quite difficult to convince people to do something different.
Can I just add one question that I've been itching to ask? How does partnering with a Premier League team like Chelsea help differentiate your university brand? So this should have been asked at the beginning, so I'm just throwing that in now.
No, it's absolutely fine. And I can talk from two perspectives, really, in that respect, because obviously Loughborough is a very specific example in terms of sport, because academically, the majority of league tables, including the QS, we are the number one, better than any other university in the world in the academic discipline. So that's one thing. Then when you also add on to that, the fact that in terms of our colleagues in the Sport Development Centre and Performance Sport, we have, phenomenal performance, sport athletes, alumni. So we do both the performance aspect, the recreational aspect as well, and the facilities and the academic, we are very, very strong. So I think for us as a university, working with a big brand, a big Premier League club like Chelsea, it's a bit more natural.
Yeah.
But what I would say is really important. And I'm speaking on behalf of colleagues now. I'm not as close to the partnership as my academic colleagues, but it's multi-layered. So I think that's the key thing. With any partnership between a university and an industry partner, what you want it to have really is maybe a research element, mm-hmm. An employability element, where maybe industry speakers come and present to our students, or our students can go and work for them as placements, interns, or after they graduate. And then anything else, So I think it's got to have different layers, whether they, we then do, let's say specific research with them, or, we use facilities, they use our facilities, we use theirs. So I think the most successful partnerships are those ones that are multi-layered, mm-hmm. and not narrow. And the other example I was going to give in a slightly different way was when I worked at Swansea, where, Swansea City and the university have a very successful even longer mm-hmm. standing relationship. And there's lots of things going on there as well, because obviously Swansea's civic and public engagement element, the sense of place in the community. Swansea City is a very community-driven club, and the university is part of the community. So you've got that dynamic as well. So I think, what I'm trying to say is it's not gimmicky, is what I'm saying. I think that's the key thing. It's got to be a considered partnership based on, deep links mm-hmm. and sustainable long-term links. Yeah. And I think, we've just signed that particular agreement with Chelsea. But actually, if you look on our website and look at the press release, you'll actually find that academically, our London campus has been working with Chelsea for a number of years mm-hmm. on different initiatives. Mm-hmm. So it's quite multifaceted. And in a similar vein, then, the Swansea and Swansea City as well. It's about student placement. It's about volunteering in the community. It's about doing initiatives with outreach. It's about research as well. It's about nutrition. It's about using facilities, shared co-location of facilities. So I think that's really powerful, because then it's not just, that's the thing about brand, isn't it? You've got that old traditional view of brand, mm-hmm. the wrong view of brand, which is just a logo and a tagline. Whereas we all know that brand is about hearts and minds. It's about substance. It's about having those proof points. It's about having something. We talk about emotion. It's all that kind of thing. So if you've got a partnership that's a true partnership, it will cover lots of different bases mm-hmm. and give you that substance, so that when you leverage that halo effect of, one brand against another brand, it really means something, and it's really, and people know it's meaningful, and then they tend to react then. Even if you're not a Chelsea fan, they'll still react in a part. I had friends who were Man U and Liverpool and Arsenal fans saying, "Oh, well, I don't like Chelsea, but my God, that's a great partnership. That's a fan. That says a lot about Loughborough. Wow, you must be pleased with that." So I think people can see that there's something more to mm-hmm. it. It's got real substance and meaning, really.
Thank you so much,
Martin. Thank you so much, Martin.
It's been a brilliant discussion.
Thank you, Martin.
It's definitely been good to go deep into your mind.
Yeah, brilliant.
In next week's episode, we're joined by Cameron Mercer. We'll be discussing digital transformation, disruptive technology, and funding models in higher education. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean a lot to us if you'd subscribe. Disrupting the Degree is brought to you by The Brand Education and Carnival Content.